Welcome to the Razor's Ink podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. In 1958, America was boiling with racial tensions. Until 1956, segregated seating on buses was perfectly legal. Segregated schools were the norm just a few years before that. Sit-ins at lunch counters that refused to serve African Americans were still a few years off, as was the March on Washington, which wouldn't take place for another 5 years. So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, a movie from that time period that had a sobering depiction of things we shared in common and the importance of that over the things that divided. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
Imagine you're chained at the wrist to somebody you hate, who hates you equally, but freedom or capture depends upon you working and pulling together. This is the storyline of the 1958 Defiant Ones, starring Sidney Poitier and Tony Curtis. I watch this movie every time it shows. It's only 96 minutes long, but envelops you inside a tension-filled, treacherous escape by two convicts. See my podcast about the movie, the 1975 Dog Day Afternoon, where I discuss another movie I never miss. Why watch these movies time and again, Jonathan? It's the magic of casting. See my podcast about the brilliance of casting directors. Sidney was just 31 years old when he plays the escaped prisoner Noah Cohen. He had 12 credited films at the time, with the 1955 Blackboard Jungle being his breakout film, opposite seasoned actor Glenn Ford, and Sidney dominates every scene.
What's your name, wise guy?
Me? Miller. Gregory Miller. You want me to spell it out for you so you won't forget it?
No, you don't have to do that. I'll remember, Mother.
Sure, Chief, you do that.
Or maybe you'd like to take a walk down to the principal's office right now with me. Is that what you want?
You holding all the cards, Chief. You want to take me to see Mr. Warnicky? You do just that.
Who's your home period teacher?
You are, Chief.
Tony Curtis was just 33 years old, but already had 33 credited films under his belt, the most notable being the 1956 Trapeze and the 1957 Sweet Smell of Success, both playing opposite Burt Lancaster.
I'll listen for one more minute. About a year ago, I did you a certain favor. It was a thing, well, I never did such a dirty thing in my life. All right, it's forgotten, forget it. Which brings us up to 5 weeks ago. Sidney, I got a nasty little problem here. Do so-and-so and I'll appreciate it. Did I say no? Was I fussy? Look, I'm the first to admit it didn't gel as fast as we'd like. But why all of a sudden can't I get you on the phone? And why, as of this date, am I frozen out of the column?
You finished?
No, let me finish, JJ. I don't like this job.
On the face of it, Tony had almost three times the number of films under his belt. He was a dynamic, handsome, leading man type. Real name, Bernard Schwartz, who lit up the screen and a favorite of female moviegoers with movie star good looks. To say Tony was playing opposite character inside the Defiant Ones is an understatement. He plays John Joker Johnson.
$1.80 an hour? That's just a stopover for a secondhand Chevy. Nah, not for me. I got smart. You're a maker or a taker. Me, I'm a taker.
And that's how come you wound up in jail.
I wound up in jail because I didn't know how to be a big enough taker. I was just a stealer. You gotta be a big crook, a big enough crook so you can get away with anything.
Both Tony and Sidney were nominated for Best Actor Oscars for The Defiant Ones. Neither actor dominates the film. They're equal and necessary ingredients, but if anything dominates the film, it's the lesson prejudice may be about skin color, but we are all in one way or another from the same side of the tracks. And humanity binds us more tightly together than the leg irons and chain binding our two characters, one white, the other black. More about humanity as I weave my analysis. Sidney unveils so many wonderful character traits in his films, it's impossible to play opposite him, at least up through his films in the 60s. I love you, Tony, and a tip of the hat for taking on this grubby, hateful, bigoted role and playing opposite Sidney, who, I contend, needed your star power just as you needed Sidney's rising star power. two young actors needing each other at a pivotal time in their respective careers. This is the theme of the film. Two men from different races who depend upon each other for survival, and in the process discover we all come from the same side of the tracks, which will be revealed again and again inside this film.
Why don't you cut it out? You keep saying thanks. I hate that word, thanks.
Don't mean nothing.
Don't mean nothing, huh? You try making a living with that word, you find out. I used to park cars in Nash's. Big fancy hotel. The fella give me his car and I'd say thank you, sir. Here, I was doing him a favor, but I had to say thank you, sir. And the louder I said it, the bigger the tip.
And that figures.
That don't figure nothing. You gotta be Charlie Potatoes, a man with the money. Then you don't have to bow down to nobody. Even when he didn't give me a tip, I still had to say thank you. That word got like it was sticking needles in me every time I said it. Not gonna happen with a word. You know what I mean, boy?
Yeah. And I got a needle sticking in me right now. Look, Joker, don't call me boy.
The Defiant Ones was released in 1958 by United Artists. The film is directed by the legendary Stanley Kramer, who gravitated towards films with tough subject matter and social themes. No time here to discuss his filmography, but here's a summary which speaks for itself. Total Oscar nominations, 85 across 35 films. 15 Oscar wins. 9 as either producer or director. 0 Oscars for Best Director. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences awarded him the Irving G. Thalberg Memorial Award in 1961 for his consistently high-quality work. The film was written by Harold Jacob Smith and adapted from a story by Nedrick Young, a screenwriter and actor with a huge filmography. Smith won the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for The Defiant Ones. Sam Levitt won the Oscar for Best Black and White Cinematography for The Defiant Ones. Black and white is beautiful film stock. Nothing escapes its frames, devouring every nuance like a Venus flytrap. Black and white film stock heightens all of the human emotions unfolding inside this film, and elevates the exterior location filming, revealing a menacing Mother Nature, hell-bent on torturing and preventing our protagonists' escape from the law hot on their heels. Ernest Gold provided the music, which is integral to setting the tempo and rhythm of the movie about running. It's regional music emanating from radios, telling us a lot about the cultural IQ existing behind the plot, and in this viewer's opinion, providing levity. The music is one reason I return over and over again to this film. Just prior to the escape inside the prison bus, Sidney sings an old folk song.
Long gone. Long gone to Kentucky.
The tune is entitled Long Gone from Bowling Green, written in 1920, music by William C. Handy, words by Chris Smith. The truck loaded with prisoners crashes and the two prisoners escape, a black man shackled to a white man, because
the warden's got a sense of humor.
They are told not to look too hard, as
they probably kill each other before they go 5 miles.
The two missing men are Noah Cullen and John Joker Jackson. A posse with bloodhounds is formed and led by Sheriff Max Mueller, played by Theodore Bacall, an actor with a long filmography.
Watch how you play with those guns. They're not toys.
You kidding, Max, after all the hunting we've done together? It's just like running rabbits.
These are men.
Same thing.
Sure. Men and rabbits, same thing. It's not the same thing.
He's a failed lawyer who works as a burnt-out county sheriff. He's locking horns with the determined state police trooper, Frank Gibbons, played by Charles McGraw, who wants to let the deadly bloodhounds loose to track down and devour our two protagonists. The uniformed trooper reminds the sheriff that he has a pension and doesn't need to run for election to be employed. We find two white men who find themselves on different sides of the tracks, both morally and within society. The sheriff won't release the vicious dogs, who will savagely hunt down our protagonists, eating them alive. The film shows us our first glimpse of humanity inside Sheriff Mueller. The trooper readies the dogs behind the sheriff's back. Colin and Joker flee through difficult terrain and weather. There's a scene inside a deep, muddy pit where our actors must climb out of during a rainstorm while chained together. No CGI here, folks. Both actors are soaking wet, muddy, and holding on to branches, only to fall back into the muddy mess again.
I know. Let go of the chain. You tell me what to do. Come on, let's fight again.
With teamwork and determination, they make it out of the hellhole.
Let me try it. Let me try it on your shoulder.
Joker's wrist has become raw and infected from the metal bracelet. Colin applies mud and wraps his sore with cloth.
What are you doing?
Looking at this hand.
What for?
Looks infected.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
Needs fixing.
Don't do me any favors.
I ain't doing you no favors, Joker.
Colin shows Joker humanity, which Joker accepts reluctantly, but the racial divide between the two has begun to crack. Joker is a white bigot who wants to become
Charlotte Potatoes coming down the street.
A euphemism for a big shot. I'd like to think Tony improvised that term. It's too original, and as a writer, I know even if scripted, the writer heard it somewhere. These men are at each other's throats, but it's racism which shows them they're both living on the same side of the tracks.
Why, you're just too sensitive, man.
I'm too nothing.
That's right, you're too nothing is right. But I got a little advice for you, man, because I like you, man. You got to take things as they are. You can't keep fighting them unless you want to be unhappy. I see you got a lot to learn, boy.
Like you living in that fancy hotel.
Yeah, like me living in that fancy hotel.
You think they're gonna let me in that fancy hotel, too?
Oh, sure they're gonna let you in that hotel. Through the back door if you got a pail and a mop.
And you through the front door just long enough to collect your tip.
It's a breakthrough moment in Joker's racial understanding of Colin. They arrive at a turpentine camp and break into a general store in hopes of obtaining food and tools to break the chain. They're captured by the workers who form a lynch mob. The actor Claude Akins leads the lynch mob. Colin and Joker are saved by Big Sam, played by Lon Chaney Jr., who persuades the mob to lock the convicts up and turn them over to the police in the morning. That night...
Wait a minute, what are you doing? I didn't hear any wagon being hitched up.
I'm letting you loose.
Why? What do you mean you're letting us loose?
I already told you. I'm letting you loose.
He secretly releases them, being a former chain gang prisoner himself.
How about letting us have that crowbar?
Don't go to pressing your luck too far, boy. Come on. Wait a minute. You get caught. Wasn't nobody let you loose. You broke out yourselves. Understand?
Yeah, thanks.
Lon Chaney Jr. isn't playing the Wolfman. Lon has an extensive filmography. Big Sam is a large, imposing man and anything but a leading man, but humanity is written all over Sam's face. This is the second time we find a semblance of humanity in a white man, the first being Sheriff Mueller's decision not to release the dogs. Our protagonists encounter a young boy named Billy, who is frightened by Colin because of his race. It's a pivotal scene as he seeks the protection of Joker, a menacing dude, but considered safe because he's a white man. They make Billy take them to his home, and they meet his single mother, played by Kara Williams. The escapees break their chains with her help. The lonely mother is attracted to Joker and wants to run off with him to New Orleans. This is also a pivotal scene because she's a looker, and Joker has every reason to split with her, even though she'll abandon her son to escape a life inside a shack out on the boonies. Colin and Joker split up to increase their chances of escape. Billy's mom tells Colin to go through the swamp to reach the railroad. Colin leaves, and the woman reveals...
I wonder what they'll do to Colin if they catch him.
No word, they won't.
Well, what makes you so sure?
Look, will you quit worrying? They ain't gonna catch him. Because he ain't never gonna get out of that swamp alive.
What are you talking about? Didn't you tell him right?
Well, there ain't no right. It's all bogs and quicksand.
Why'd you do it?
Well, suppose they caught him. What if he told them?
What if he told them what? What could he tell them?
So they wouldn't come looking, so we could have time.
Time for what?
Time! Time for us to get away. To get to a city. A big city, so big they could never find you.
Joker reveals he actually has a vein of humanity, leaves the mother, and runs after Colin to save his life. Billy shoots him. I think it's a veiled metaphor for the price Joker must pay for leaving behind his bigotry for goodness. Joker is wounded but manages to catch up with Colin and warns him about the mother's deception and treacherous swamp. Look at Colin's face when Joker reveals the truth. Colin knows Joker left behind a certain escape with a pretty woman to save his ass. The two hear a train whistle and run toward it. It's a gigantic metaphor that I offered up earlier. Despite skin color, our two protagonists always lived on the same side of the tracks. Colin catches up to the train and jumps aboard. Joker runs alongside, desperately trying to catch up. Colin holds out his hand. Their hands clasp, but Colin is unable to pull Joker aboard. Colin can leave Joker behind while the train moves ahead, but like Joker's decision to save Colin out in the swamp, Colin decides to jump off the train and stay with Joker, which will certainly mean imminent capture. Too exhausted to run, they realize all they can do is wait for their pursuers. Sheriff Mueller finds Colin singing defiantly and Joker lying in his arms.
Ain't he lucky? Long gone to Kentucky.
This is a beautiful scene and especially poignant for 1958 audiences. I contend these were gutsy roles, as many audience members wouldn't care for this intimate scene and racially divisive times. If I were writing the screenplay or had the ear of the writer and director, I'd suggest Sheriff Mueller let them go, saying, "Go on, get. One black, one white. The two of you may make it together or not. We're all tired of this chasing about, and we've learned a lot." Sydney takes us to closing credits.
Look here what I got. 20 long years on a chain gang, sweating and busting rock.
A good bookend for this film is the Sidney Poitier and John Cassavetes race-inspired friendship movie, the 1957 Edge of the City. The Defiant Ones is time well spent because it's a reminder that in the final analysis, we're all living on the same side of the tracks. Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint and...
Bowling Green, sewing machine.
And if I may, I'd suggest two other bookends for The Defiant Ones. First, the Warner Brothers cartoon, Da Fightin' Ones, in which Sylvester the Cat is chained to a bulldog as they both try to evade capture from the animal catcher. The other is the B movie, being generous here, called The Thing with Two Heads, in which the head of a racist white man is grafted onto the body of Rosie Grier, the former defensive tackle of the Los Angeles Rams. Okay, maybe not. But while there have been several remakes of The Defiant Ones over the years, the original still stands tall and still resonates. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. Also, look for Jonathan's latest short story, The Line in the Lake, published in the most recent issue of the online magazine Mobius. You can find it at mobiusmagazine.com or drop an email to razorsincpodcast@gmail.com.